The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Press This, the WordPress community podcast on WMR. This is your host, David Vogelpohl. I support the WordPress community through my role at WP Engine, and I love to bring the best of the community to you here every week on Press This. As a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at WPDavidV. You can subscribe to Press This on Red Circle, iTunes, Spotify, or download the latest episodes at wmr.fm. In this episode, we're going to be talking about increasing the quality of your quality assurance. And joining us for that conversation from Illustrate Digital, I'd like to welcome Johnny Alba to Press This. Johnny, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, everyone.
So glad to have you here. And where are you joining us from today, Johnny?
I am based in sunny Birmingham in the United Kingdom, but it's not that sunny, actually.
I like it. Most of what I know from Birmingham comes from Peaky Blinders, but I do look forward to visiting one day.
Yeah, it's slightly safer than it was portrayed in that program.
Yeah, I would suspect it's not true to life. Maybe more so time period, but definitely not
today. You got it.
that's awesome. That's great to hear. Well, thanks for joining us. For those listening, what Johnny's going to be talking about, Johnny's the head of product, by the way, at Illustrate Digital. And what he's going to be talking about are his thoughts on why having a solid QA process is critical, what you can do to improve your existing QA processes and make them stronger and not as annoying, and really to do all this without turning your roadmap velocity upside down. And really looking forward to Johnny's actionable advice in today's interview. Well, Johnny, I'm going to ask you the same question I ask every guest. Could you briefly tell me your WordPress origin story? When was the first time you used WordPress?
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure to. So, my journey started in the late 90s, actually. I was trained as a traditional graphic designer, and that's kind of where I started my career, although even back then, I was teaching myself HTML and all that kind of stuff. And essentially, I'm a self-taught developer of, I would say, medium level on a good day. So really, I started messing around with content management systems around the very early 2000s, things like PHP Nuke and Mambo, all these systems that no longer exist, and got into WordPress around about 2005. And just didn't look back. It was very easy for me to work with. I could understand the code, that kind of stuff. The templating system was awesome. And frankly, it seems like I make a very good choice looking at all those stats. So I freelance for agencies and independent clients from big, huge global brands down to one person companies, set up a couple of agencies, which I sold out on, or I should say sold my shares in, not sold out on. And since April 2021, I've been working at Illustrate Digital. So it's bit of a transition for me in many ways, David, that I've kind of moved out of production now. I'm into quality assurance and heading up product development at Illustrate Digital.
Excellent, excellent. Do you remember in 2005-ish when you found WordPress? What was the kind of moment that brought it to your attention, or do you recall that far back?
I do actually. I have a couple of quite strong memories of it was not long after I started developing on it that Pages got introduced. Before that, we just had posts. I think it was around about 1.4, 1.5, something like that, David. And that was a real sort of groundbreaker for me, where I sort of transitioned from, you know, seeing it as a very nice little blogging platform, which is somewhat what led me to it, to something that could be harnessed as a custom content management system. So that was my real sort of like breaking moment where I went, oh, this could do a lot more. And I heavily started repurposing it at that point.
Okay, good deal. You know, I have a little cheat sheet here for these WordPress origin stories where I have like a timeline of major WordPress events. 2005 was when themes hit, but I don't have when pages hit. That was a little before my time in building WordPress sites. And so I never really recognized how monumental that must have been. I'll have to come back to that. Maybe we'll do like a throwback episode or something.
Yeah, it felt big. It felt like a big step forward. Yeah, off the top of my head, it was roughly around about 1.5-ish, but don't quote me on that.
All right, good deal. My dates are better than my version numbers on some of these key moments in history.
Yeah, you got it.
Love it. All right, cool. Well, thanks for that background here. I'd like to kind of switch now into kind of the topic of the day here, which is QA. And I would like you to help me understand how you think of the different, say, pillars of QA. What are the different aspects of QA as you think about that universe? Is it more than just like manual and automated testing? Like, help me understand how you think of the structure of QA.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, actually, David, because, you know, I think the pitfall that many people fall down when they think of QA is they think it's just glorified testing. It's a black and white outcome. It's a pass or fail. And really, the reality of high level quality assurance is that it spans across a lot of disciplines and techniques. Frankly, it takes a hawk eye and, dare I say, a bit of an obsession with perfection to be an effective QA-er. I think there's a lot of levels on the spectrum of QA. You know, we can go from functional testing through to creative accessibility. There's a lot of different facets, but, you know, ultimately, I think there needs to be a clear division when a good production team thinks about QA. And one of the key sort of concepts I'd like to introduce is putting the right person on the right job. So as I mentioned, on a good day, I would consider myself an intermediate developer. I wasn't bad. I had my moments of brilliance and had my moments of hackiness. But, you know, ultimately, when you think about QA, it's more than one person. It's more than one team, frankly. So to illustrate that, let me explain a little bit how Illustrate Digital approach QA, in that there's a very clear division between, should we call it code quality and quality assurance. So code quality, as I said, I'm maybe not the best person to do like code reviews of front end and back end code. So actually, before it even enters the QA process, all code is peer reviewed by another developer, not by the person that created it. You can get a little bit blinkered and think, oh, it's kind of done, whereas a fresh set of eyes. So that goes for front end code and back end code. So before it even enters the QA process, it's peer reviewed by another developer, and you know they're the right people for the right job. And when we think about the art of QA, it really is this. It can get extremely complicated, and there is nothing wrong with kind of whizzing through QA and sort of going, yes, it works, yes, it meets functional specs, but high level QA really, it's a lot more than that. It's not a black and white pass or fail. So if we just run down, so just roughly and as briefly as possible. So QA goes from start to finish in our company. So it's carried out even on the technical outline, user stories. The content architecture in particular is looked at in detail. And this is where my role crosses between QA and head of product. You know, getting the content architecture of a site right is, it not only makes it work better for content editors, but obviously, as we all know, it offers some great functionality between building relationships between certain kinds of content. And then obviously for the developers, there has nice knock-on effects of how they use those relationships to display content. So QA is carried out at a very, very early stage before a line is even written of code.
So then it sounds like, sorry to cut you off there, but it sounds like from the high level, like, because I heard you talk about the structure, you talked about the different levels of disciplines that would be applied as part of a QA process. You kind of had mentioned accessibility. I liked how you separated code quality, though, from the QA. And then thinking about like having the right person do the right job. So this is like the levers I'm pulling, right? My degree of code quality checks, how they're being done, which disciplines I'm including in my QA process, and at what level of scrutiny. And then you're also applying it kind of throughout the process. And that seems, you know, very, you know, well thought out and planned. And I'm kind of curious, like, what you think a lot of teams maybe do the wrong way when they approach QA, and maybe where that line is between going too far. But we're going to take our first break and we'll be right back.
Time to plug into a commercial break. Stay tuned for more Press This in just a moment.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Press This, the WordPress community podcast on WMR. We're in the middle of interviewing Johnny Albert of Illustrate Digital about quality, increasing the quality of your quality assurance. Johnny, right before the break, you were talking a little bit about how you view the structure of QA, talking about how there's different types of disciplines that could be applied to it, different levels of those disciplines. And you were talking about having it all the way through the process at Illustrate Digital. Paint us a picture of like the bad way. What are some ways you think teams take shortcuts in their QA where it might be costing them?
Well, you know, dare I say, when we kind of cover this stuff, David, and obviously QA is right through, as you said, from UI and UX, front end, back end, user experience of content editors and stuff like that. We have built a very exhaustive process at Illustrate Digital that we follow. But, you know, dare I say, to answer that kind of question, you know, just to be open and honest, we've learned the hard way on some of this about, you know, where dev teams maybe go wrong a little bit, where things kind of pop up, and, you know, should we say almost like what are the common mistakes? So, you know, but it comes back to what I said earlier, David, around the right person for the right job. Now, I'm somewhat of a unicorn in some ways, in that I have a huge creative design background and a rather eagle eye on that stuff. I also have a dev background in front end and back end, and know WordPress intimately. So I'm a little bit different in that I'm able to kind of QA across the spectrum. But when we think about sort of where the common pitfalls are and things like that, you know, ultimately, if we just take a step back and think, you know, it is the responsibility of our production team, and they know this. They have a very clearly set items and expectations around what we expect them to do before it hits QA. So we don't expect our developers to carry out exhaustive QA, but what we do expect them to do is carry out obviously a certain amount of testing. And I think this is one of the pitfalls that teams can experience, in that if you do not define your expectations, how can you expect a producer to tick those off? Because they may be very hurried, they may need to move on to something else, so naturally they may speed through a testing process, whereas others, they may be more diligent, more conscious of things. And, you know, I think getting a clear set of expectations for your production team is a good thing to do. One of the other big pitfalls for producers is testing too late. So, you know, I really have a mantra of testing early and test often. Ultimately, you know, and anyone that's been in this game for any period of time will know that fixing issues early is always cheaper than fix them later on. You can have knock-on effects, you can have regression testing issues, all kinds of stuff. So it's getting into the mindset of not leaving your testing right to the end, and actually getting into a decent sort of continuous testing process is a good thing to do. Another point is, as I mentioned, not being aware of regression testing. So does amending a certain component have a knock-on effect to other areas? A good example could be you're styling up the newsletter sign-up form that's got one field and styling the error messages around that. Do those amends break your main forms? Things like that. So yeah, another common mistake is just being not clear on the code structure and existing UI. So a developer may jump in, they may have a new block to create, they start almost with a clean sheet without realizing that probably 80% of the CSS is already written for them and it just needs extending a little bit, that kind of thing. And on a final point, I should say, my heart goes out to all backend devs when I say this. I hold them very close to my heart, but with the greatest of respect, they often think in more functional terms. So does it work and does it generate errors? If it doesn't, it kind of passes QA in a back-end dev's mind. But really, there's a lot of value in them appreciating some of the finer details of front-end and UX and UI and decisions that have been made around a product. So, yeah, there's a few on the hit list there. I don't want to dig in too deep, David, but hopefully that's given you a few pointers and ideas for listeners around, you know, some of the shortcuts, some of the, well, dare I say, mistakes that get made, the pitfalls.
I think I just got a cold sweat and like this rush of fear thinking about my own testing too late in the process and like up against a deadline, and you're like, oh, all these things are broken, and you're like, I wish I would have tested this earlier. Yeah, definitely been in some of those spots before. Now, as I think of like smaller teams, you know, that might not have all the right people for the right QA jobs, do you find like that documentation side helps, where, you know, the project leader, whoever's in charge of that on the QA side, you know, researches the expertise and then, you know, or I don't know, hire someone to help define it and then makes that part of the process? Like, how do you think about it when a team doesn't have, you know, an infinite a group of the quote, right people for the right jobs?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, if we if we put this concept into a smaller production team, obviously it's generally only larger teams that can afford to have a dedicated QA team. And in smaller teams, it's going to be a crossover role. And that's cool, because actually QA can teach developers a hell of a lot. So there is a benefit to that in some ways. And to touch upon your point there, David, around process, I mean, to me, process is everything. You know, I've personally developed all the internal QA processes at Illustrate Digital. And, you know, it's one of those things. If you cannot define a process, how do you know your QA is being completed correctly? So, you know, in our mind, we have effectively a producer's QA checklist, which is a little bit lighter than the QA department's one. So, you know, it covers the main stuff. But ultimately, we can give that checklist to any one of our producers. We have guidance notes on it. It's actually a Google form that records the results in a spreadsheet. So it's all recorded and auditable and can be repeated. But yeah, it comes back to having something that... that can be replicated and that is consistent. Because if you do not have a process, and it can just be a simple checklist, it doesn't have to be some exhaustive document, how do you know that project A has been QA'd up to the standard of project B? You don't. It's subjective. Someone tells you they've completed QA. If there's nothing recorded and there's no audit of what's been recorded. Hell, I could have whizzed through in 5 minutes, David, and gone, yeah, that looks awesome. QA pass. Have you got confidence in that without seeing some stuff checked off? No, I doubt it. So yeah, it gives our team a whole lot of confidence, and also means from a sharing of tasks, it means again, that if you're in a smaller team, you may go, okay, well, we'll split off the accessibility testing to our front ender, who is most knowledgeable about that kind of stuff. We'll split off the performance testing to our back end developers. So, you know, it allows, if you design a good process that's carved up into good logical chunks, it means that you don't have to necessarily have a dedicated QA-er. You just, again, put the right person on the right job, David.
Yeah, I like that. That's a nice way to approach it on those smaller teams. I also liked how you were talking about the process. I'm a process person too, and I often tell people, like, it takes time to check off the processes and set them up, but once you get them in motion, it actually adds so much speed. And I heard you kind of mention that as well, is like by having it well documented and, you know, over time developing those motions around that process, then the developer QA person's job becomes faster. I also liked how you kind of pointed out it also gives you kind of this point of measure, so you know if what you're doing is good or not. I like to think of those people that might just kind of anecdotally QA something and not necessarily have a checklist as having to deal with those. But what about questions? Like, are you sure questions? Like, are you sure the SEO is good? And you're like, I don't know. I guess I'll have to go back and check that. But the checklist. Yes. Helps to provide that, and then also the consistency. What I haven't heard you talk about yet, though, with that process and just the whole notion of essentially kind of having a QA framework, is its impact on scale. Like we talked about the small teams. I'm kind of curious how you think about it on the larger teams, but we're going to take our last break and we'll be right back.
Time to plug into a commercial break. Stay tuned for more Press This in just a moment.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Press This, the WordPress community podcast on WMR. We're in the middle of talking about increasing the quality of your quality assurance with Johnny Albert. Johnny, right before the break, you were telling us a little bit about your kind of process for QA and the strength of providing velocity and knowing what you're supposed to do, the kind of aspect of measurement to know if what you're doing is being done and done properly, and then just, of course, that consistency. But I'm kind of curious on the scale side, like how you think about scaling these things, you know, whether it be in a medium or of course, a very large org.
Yeah, I mean, you said you're a process guy yourself, David. And, you know, at the end of the day, if your process is designed right, it should scale from a 3-person team up to a 300-person production team at the end of the day. So, you know, when it comes down to that kind of thing, again, if we think more about the scale of our team at Illustrate Digital, you know, we're about 20 odd strong. So I'd describe us as kind of medium sized. We're not that big. We're certainly not small. But I think one of the primary drivers around this about doing effective QA in larger teams is, and it's a quality that any QA needs, is great communication. So, you know, at any one time, we could have a project in development that has, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 front enders working on it, 2 or 3 back enders working on it, and a whole lot of other project managers and stuff moving all over the project at once. So, you know, at any one time, we could maybe have like around about 8 people active on a project that are involved in one level or another in QA. So, you know, I think ultimately it comes down to having a really, really good project management process, the bugbear of every agency. And that's something we're consistently working on ourselves. You know, I don't think we've got it quite right yet, but we have put in a lot of work on that. So when we think about, you know, a large scale production team that might have, for argument's sake, 50 people working on a certain site, to me, it doesn't matter if there's 2 or 200 people, because if your communication is right and you're using a project management tool effectively, I just plug into the project management tool. So in a very simplified form, if you think about waterfall mentality and process, you know, you kind of got your columns and the cards move across. Well, they eventually end up in QA. And at that point, and I'll give you a couple of insights about how this works. Obviously, the code reviews are done for back end and front end and that kind of thing. And then a subtask is created on the said card for a said block for quality assurance testing. And I will create subtasks on that that basically will allocate certain tasks to front end, to back end, maybe to both. And it's for the production team to pick up. Now, something I should mention here as well, something that got decided early on, and again, it's, you know, sometimes you got to try these things out. It maybe doesn't suit all team, and, you know, it's just the way it is that I'll create the QA feedback task. I'll write it as concisely as possible, not too wordy, just the information they need. They could be supporting screenshots, potentially marked up. We obviously ensure all the information is there. So a producer, and it doesn't matter if it's out of a pool of 100 devs that are jumping onto that card or one, ultimately it should be so clear and simple, and they should have all the information they need in front of them. So links to the dev site, links to a demo page set up.
You know, and it's funny because like it is a lot of work, but when you think about all the different times you end up doing those steps, to have that shortcut multiplied by all those times ends up being a tremendous amount of time savings, I found. And I think the other thing, it was interesting to hear you talk about it, as I imagine these bigger teams and scaling QA, was also even on smaller teams, you have people kind of coming in and out of the organization. So you still have like these onboarding challenges, even if you don't necessarily have the scale, but this was all incredibly interesting. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting about all this today, Johnny.
My pleasure, David. We could do a part 2, 3, 4, and 5, buddy. Well, I've got a lot of info on this.
Yeah, we'll have to QA this interview and see how we do.
Very good.
Retro here, so. But thank you so much again, Johnny. And thanks everyone for listening to Press This, the WordPress Community Podcast on WMR. If you'd like to learn more about what Johnny is up to, please visit illustrate.digital. This has been your host, David Vogelpohl. I support the WordPress community through my role at WP Engine, and I love to bring the best of the community to you here every week on Press This.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.